IVM.
Hi everybody, welcome to the 12th episode of the Sponge Podcast with Ambi Parmeshwaran. We're going to be talking about the 12th chapter of his book, Sponge, Leadership Lessons I Learned from My Clients. The chapter is Red, White, and Brown. Wow, Ambi, you worked on a cigarette campaign too, huh? In 2018, that probably does not seem like something you would have done too much of.
And I used to smoke for 20 years of my life, so it's okay, you know. So I used to smoke probably a pack or two every day.
So, So like not just like a cigarette here or there.
Regular. I was a regular smoker for 20
years. I
think
advertising used to be a very smoking heavy.
Well, I mean, they used to say IIT was very smoking heavy.
Everything is smoking heavy,
smoking heavy. Those days,
everything is smoking heavy.
I mean, today when I tell youngsters that, you know, there was a time when the flight takes off and the pilot announces that, you know, the seatbelt signs are off and you can see everyone lighting up cigarettes inside an aircraft. So you say, are you crazy? People used to smoke inside. I said, of course, we all used to smoke inside aircrafts.
I remember hearing those messages, smoke them if you got them.
And then your armrest used to have a
ashtray.
Yes. Yeah. So you know, it's like you're thinking, you know, from a different age, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I remember. So I stopped having smoking happen in my office in 2001 or something like that. And I was still one of the earlier people in India compared to a lot of other people, right? But still, it was just like, it was kind of like, oh, wow, you're not smoking in your office anymore. I'm like, yeah, no, we're not smoking in our office anymore. But sorry, to come back to this, we were, so this, the key story over here, I think, is the red and white cigarette launch.
Yeah, so
Sorry, but before we go into that, you have a very interesting paragraph up front where you're talking about how the job of an account executive in the 1980s was significantly different than it is today, right? Especially in terms of the fact that you have to be able to work in a whole bunch of different areas. It's much more specialized now in function compared to what it was then. I thought maybe you can, like, you know, kind of give some of the younger listeners a way back in the day, this is how it used to be, little.
Oh, yeah. So you know, I mean, in the late 70s, early 80s, the client servicing team in an agency pretty much did a lot more than what they do today. For example, the client servicing guy often also doubled up as the account planner. So you had to do a bit of strategy. Client servicing guy also sometimes had to also do media planning. Because he was probably, you know, knew how to handle numbers, et cetera, et cetera. So you did media planning. And depending on the agency, in the smaller agencies, an account planning guy would probably have to do negotiation with the filmmakers, with photographers.
Right.
He has to be a prop guy to arrange for props. He probably also understood print technology because sometimes he had to run to the printer to get some things done. So you're really jack of all trades, right. You know. So nowadays with agencies, these have all become specialized. So there is an account executive, there is an account planner, there is a media planner, there is a production executive, there is a film executive, there's a model coordinator, there is a language coordinator, right. There are, you know, studio manager. So you have so many people who are doing specific jobs and the account executive's job is really stay in the middle and pass the, you know, ball to the various players in the field. Those days, you actually had to run around, you know, so get this thing done.
Do you think that there was, I mean, like, you know, I don't want to turn this into like, you know, our days were better than new days kind of thing. But I mean, like, do you think that that developed skills in a more interesting way than they are doing currently done?
I you know, I'm biased. I would say yes. But I think today the challenges are a lot different. Today an account executive also needs to know a lot more about technology. He needs to know digital. Those days we used to handwrite charts and present it to clients. Today you got to make nice PowerPoint presentations. You got to be probably able to even do small GIF files and stuff like that. So today the job is different. So I wouldn't say we were better and they are not as good. But even today, I would strongly recommend that that to be a full, well-rounded advertising person, you need to know different aspects of
That's what I was trying to get at, right? I mean, like, because I think that if somebody gets into a particular area, they stick in that area, right? Whereas if you jump around a little bit and know what's going on in, like, all of these different spaces, you understand the business itself at large.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a good client servicing guy should say after 2 or 3 years, boss put me in some other department. Send me to media or put me in account planning or put me in something else. You know, let me get out and do something else. The problem is a lot of them get very comfortable in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other bigger problem is their bosses become very possessive of them.
Mm.
You know, saying, no, I can't spare him. You know, he's very important for this account, etc.
Right.
So it's a combined problem. The bosses have to say, look, this bird is ready to fly and, you know, let him fly. Let him go to some other department. Even working across accounts is a big learning, you know.
Right.
Those days we used to work across many different types of accounts. Today, a lot of people just work on one account. So you work on, let's say, one big account, for 25 years, which is itself, I think, is a little too constraining.
I can see that. Okay, so we were going to discuss the launch of Red and White cigarettes in Bombay.
Yeah, so Red and White is manufactured by Philip Morris, Indian company of Philip Morris, which is called Godfrey Phillips.
Right.
And it's a pretty successful brand. Red and White filter cigarettes was pretty successful in Rajasthan, Haryana, parts of Delhi. And they wanted to storm the Mumbai market. Mm-hmm. Now, Mumbai was a strong, complete stronghold of ITC.
Okay.
With its whole range of Wills Filter and Gold Flake, etc. GPI, Godfrey Phillips, had one brand which was successful in Mumbai, which was Foursquare.
Okay.
But they felt Foursquare was premium. So they wanted to come out a slightly more popular priced brand to take on Gold Flake Kings. So we had worked on the campaign and we were getting ready to launch. And as you know, that time, I think it was the early 80s, 81, I think, or 80 or 81, cigarette marketing or cigarette distribution in Mumbai was pretty complex. There was what is called a retail union, what they call the Tambaku Dealers Association had a very strong union, which used to dictate terms to the manufacturers, right?
Interesting. And
so we were working on this campaign and we had a fairly, those days, cigarette advertising was permitted in print, was permitted in cinema, was permitted in outdoor, was permitted in POP material outside shops. Only, I think, radio and television, cigarette advertising was not allowed in India. So we're doing a print campaign for Red and White. And after much discussion, the campaign was finalized. And the CEO of the company, Kirit Vaidya, had a long discussion with him. And he told us that we should put the price of the cigarette in the ad. So we said a pack of 10s cost, 4.50 rupees, or something like that. So no one in the cigarette industry had done that. No one puts the price out there because the retailers, kind of sell it at a price which suits them.
Right.
So while the company gives them a 10% margin, they charge up another 10% because of various reasons. They say there's tobacco laws. We sell a lot of cigarettes on loose basis. Right. And, some cigarettes, tobacco falls off and you have to take the law. So we'll mark it up. So they used to mark it up. So the meeting went on and then he said, look, let's not put the price, but Mr. Vaidya said, no, I think we need to break this whole thing and we need to put the price. So I'm telling you guys, put the price, we'll face the music. So we said, okay. So the ad was approved. We went back to office and started getting the artwork done. And I think the next day, artwork got made. Those days, nowadays you send digital files, you can send it by email. But those days you had to get an artwork done. Artwork had to be made into a block. Block had to be made into a mat, and the mat is then sent to
the press.
Yeah, sent to Times of India or whichever other press. So we had sent all the material to the publication, and the space had been booked. And the next day, the ad was supposed to come on page 3 or something like that. And I was in my office, and I get a call at 12 noon from Mr. Vaidya saying, "Look, Ambi, that ad. We need to remove the price." So I said, look, Mr. Vaidya, the material is already gone, right? And it's 12 or 1, and, I don't know. How will I pull back the material, create new material, make sure I give it to Times of India? Those days, Times of India had a cutoff of 5 p.m. If you don't give the material by 5 p.m., the ad is not going to appear.
Right.
and you want the ad to appear tomorrow. Can I postpone the ad? He said, no, you can't postpone the ad because, you know, we're doing a sales conference and all that. So I said, look, I don't know whether I can do it. He said, no, please try. I'm coming. So I said, no, why are you coming? He said, no, I'm coming. And half an hour later, he was sitting in my office. The CEO of the company sitting with me saying, you know, please get it done. So I said, Mr. Vaidya, you're embarrassing me. You know, I'll try, right, but right. You don't need to come. Come and sit with me. But he said, no, I'll sit with you if you have any issues. So in fact, he offered. He said, look, you want me to talk to Times of India? You want me to talk to your, block maker? Anyone, I will talk. So I said, no, we'll manage. And finally, what happened, we did manage to get the price removed, showed him the artwork, got the price removed, and get the new material done and sent it to the publication, and the ad appeared the next day. Right? Now, it kind of left an indelible mark in my head. You know, why did Mr. Vaidya come all the way to my office? As a CEO, he could have easily sent one of his minions down, right?
Yeah.
But I think somewhere he felt guilty that, you know, he was making us work, you know, twice over on this job.
Right.
After saying no to what we had recommended. Originally, we had recommended don't put the price. And he had fought and said, I want the price. So I think he was kind of showing his humility in a very touching way. He need not have come. But later we told him, you know, you need not have come. He said, no. I'm putting you guys through all this trouble. The least I can do is be with you.
Yeah, no, I think it actually kind of parallels in some ways some of the other things we've looked at from different successful leaders, right? Whether it's Ratan Tata during the launch of the Indigo
Marina. Yeah. Or Mr. Adiaga, who said, I will write and give you the copy.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a great sign of leadership that, you know, the whole concept called authentic happiness, you know, book by Martin Seligman, who created the concept of positive psychology, you know, that all of us have 24 different types of strengths, right? And he groups them into six buckets. There is wisdom and knowledge. There is courage. There is humanity. There is justice. There is temperance and transcendence. As a leader, you tend to feel that you only need wisdom and knowledge.
Right.
You only need courage. But great leaders also have a great sense of gratitude. They have a great sense of humility, right? Which all comes under temperance and transcendence and stuff like that.
Right.
So this left a very strong impression in me that, you know, however high in the organization you go, you got to be ready to go and do the job at the front.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're doing a sales call, you're a product manager or sales manager doing a sales call, you got to be ready to walk into the shop with your salesman and clean the bottles of shampoo or whatever.
Right.
You know, you have to be ready to do that. So, like as a big honcho in an ad agency, are you humble enough to go and actually sit with the DTP operator in the studio to say, look, yaar, you know, I will sit with you. I will give you the approval sitting here. You don't need to take a printout and come to my cabin. I will sit with you. So people will say, no, boss, you go now. We'll, you know. So no, I'll sit with you. It may be 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, doesn't matter. Or when you're editing a film, sometimes, you know, filmmakers are friends. So they say, look, Ambi, I'm going to be doing a rough edit, but is it possible to come and sit for a few hours in the studio? Yeah, I'll come. So you're sitting there in the studio, doing the rough edit and then going forward, backward on it. Because you could have easily said, look, I can't come, you know, tomorrow, bring the tape to my office and show it to me. But you say, no, you know, he's calling me. It's a show, you know, sign of faith.
It is. So there's a tension over here, right? If you're the person who's at the top of things or who is supervising things, right? To what degree are you, at what point does it, how do you decide what is the line between providing support to the team and at the same time making the team feel like you're not sitting on their head?
Right? This is a tough question to ask. You know, so what happens sometimes is that you have I've had very good colleagues who turn around and say, "Look, Ambi, you go home.
Yeah,
right. I'm managing it.
Oh,
so it's okay. I'm going.
Yeah.
Right. But if the guy says, look, we are working on it. Is it possible for you to stay? Yeah, of course I'll stay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So I've had colleagues who say, look, you've given us what you want done. We think we can do it. We will do it. You go home. No, we'll manage. Right. But sometimes they say, look, we are going to do the first edit. We're going to try the first music. Can you
take a look at it before
we go in the wrong direction? I'll be more than happy.
I find that very valuable too, right? I mean, like if you're working on some sort of creative project and at that point, if you go down the wrong path, then I mean, like every step you take further down that path takes forever to unravel, right? So then you either have to start from scratch or you have to kind of this. So it's better if there is the people who need to make decisions involved at some level.
Yeah, so it's a call which, so you always have a fear that am I imposing myself on the person, you know. So you kind of give them the option, look, you're going to do the music. Would you like us to be there?
Right.
Some filmmakers say, yeah, would love to have you there. Right. Some of them say, no, leave it to us. We'll come and present as a full-blown thing because we know what we're doing. Right. So both works, you know. So both have its strengths, both work. So, but the big thing is, I believe, and I think the lesson from this story is that, being demanding and being humble can actually go hand in hand.
It's tough.
Yeah, but you know, this is example. Look at him. He got me to work around, you know, I mean, I had to pull a lot of favors to get the stuff done.
Hmm.
Right. And he didn't shout. He was polite. He sat with me and I was making calls. I was calling the block maker. The production manager was, I took literally fall at his feet saying, I'm sorry, you know, Alfred, this is a rest in peace. Alfred, he said, you can't do it. No, I can't do it. I said, no, Alfred, you have to do it. Yeah. If you want, I'll go. I'll go to the printer. I'll go to this. So finally it happened, right?
Hmm.
It happened without shouting. My client did not shout at me.
Right.
You know? So it's a big lesson that, you can actually be very demanding, but you can also be very humble.
Right.
And that's a unique combination. If you can do that, you can get people to fly, right? Whether it is whomever you work with. You in software, you may have worked with, you know, programmers. In advertising, you work. In advertising, you control nothing, right?
Right.
Films are made by the filmmaker. Photography is done by the photographer. Music is done by the music director. Sometimes illustrations are done by the special illustrator.
Right.
You control nothing. But actually you end up controlling everything if you are able to go down
and work with these people.
Yeah. Work in the trenches, as they say.
Yes.
You know? So, and they appreciate it. You know, I mean, you go and sit in the studio, late into the night, the guys, the studio manager, the DTP guys all say, you know, we'll do anything for this guy. You know,
yeah.
So happy to work.
No, I think if you're going to, at the bare minimum, if you're going to demand that people do a lot of work for you, you need to show them that you're putting in the same effort.
Absolutely. You should be ready to work, right? And, you should be ready to put in the time, put in the hours, put in the effort so that, you know, you're not dictating things to them. And that's very true today. I think it's true in every business, but especially in service industry, it's all the more true that the boss has to be ready to, you know.
Yeah, you got to be there
with
the absolutely. Troops.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a lesson from our red, white and brown.
Interesting. Let's end this episode for right now. We'll be back next week with India's first CEO, CN. This will be the 13th chapter in the Sponge Podcast. Thank you, Ambi, very much.
Yeah, thank you.